So, in preparation for this show, I'd never actually heard the song before, nor had I heard who Betty Who was. So,
How many who's
I.
would Betty Who with who Betty Who hoodie
Betty Whom!
Betty Whoomst?
So, I listened to the song a couple of times. I researched who Betty Who was. I have the lyrics up on my computer. But then I went back and listened to a couple of Pitch Shift episodes and realized that none of that's going to be useful because whatever we're about to hear is just going to take like a left turn into a small corner of Tansy's mind, to which I can't
Absolutely.
predict. I'm not going to be able to predict what's happening.
Oh no. I mean, I don't even know if Tansy's going to be able to predict what happens.
I'm never sure what's about to happen in my own life or in my own pictures,
Yeah.
so.
I don't know what this show is. Who am
You're Charles and I'm Tansy, and
You
this
are
week we
Tansy.
got special guest Zaina, who we're so excited to have.
Yay! Welcome,
I'm
Zaina.
very pumped because normally we explain the show as like one person pitches a movie based on a song and the other person acts as a producer and like offers advice or punch-ups, but this time we have like an actual producer, which is super exciting. I am very excited to hear stuff. I
Put me
have
out of
been
a job,
long-term
Zaina.
fan of Tansy's work and look
Oh.
forward to seeing whether I'll invest millions of my own money into this
Yeah, we're gonna need about
pitch.
10 to 15 mil, so
Wow, that's a big
I'm
budget for
also
this film. I'm excited because from time to time as well, Tansy has sent me actual screenplays, which are brilliant. Like, they're always very well thought out, very interesting. But I know that from today, this is going to be
This is gonna be
maybe a bit
rough.
of a.
It's just different.
Yeah, it's a
It's not
different
better or
format.
worse than stuff that we spend, like hours of time and blood, sweat, and tears and stress in. It's just different. It's
Yeah, that's
just
going to be my final
different.
note at the end of the episode, be
Oh,
going,
that was
it's different. It's
different.
nice, it's different,
It's
it's
unusual. It's
unusual.
different.
So I think we should say what the song is for this
Yeah.
week. So this week I'm going to be pitching a movie based on Betty Who's Mama Say.
Mama said, come with me and what you need. I'll light you up because I can see the fire in your eyes. What if we kiss just like this? Go insane tonight.
Charles doesn't like this song.
Yeah, I don't like the song.
How do
I
you feel
didn't
about it,
I
Zaina?
I'd say it's a weird one because it's kind of strange that it exists in our universe. How did because you had said something, Charles, about how it is seems edgier than it is.
Or like it
And it was
thinks it's
only
edgier than it is.
It's like, wow, I'm
Yeah.
so sick and twisted, and it's like, I don't think you
She's a
are.
sick and twisted joker.
It's like the thing about like, oh, you love a pretty girl with a twisted mind, you love when my loving hurts. It's like, I assume that in that context, like, it's just that she's like, I'm in charge. Ooh, so edgy. Like,
So this pitch for Mama Say is like partially implied inspired by the song and partially inspired by that poster for Cordelia that was going around, where everyone saw the poster and was like, Pride and Prejudice and pegging. And then the actual synopsis and trailer for the film came out and it was like, crazy lady thriller where a lady's crazy. And everyone was like, I feel catfished and ashamed.
you see this girl? What if this girl was gone?
Tansy had sent through the log line for this one beforehand, which is two long estranged high school classmates reconnect when one is diagnosed with cancer, but not everything is as it seems. And I think I was surprised because I half expected a Doctor Who themed movie, which I believe this is not.
It is not Doctor Who's younger cousin, Betty Who. Played by Millie Bobby Brown.
How do surnames work in the Doctor Who universe, in the
No, well,
Whoniverse?
because isn't he the doctor? He's like he's it's not his first name's doctor, his last name's who.
I
He's the
mean,
doctor.
or is it?
But also I think that I mean this is me, telling on myself about the fact that I used to be a big ol' I not a
Nerd.
super not a super hoolock, but
But a who
like
lock? I
yeah,
thought it was
and like a little
Whovian.
bit
Oh
super.
no, there's like the super who lock is like Whovian but worse.
Yeah, oh yeah, I was worse. Back like, 10 years ago. Anyway, but no, it's because like they all like choose their name. What are they called? What is this race called? Yeah, the Time Lords. No, but they have like a there's like a name for the Gallifreyans.
So like you get to choose the name?
Yeah, yeah. That's why like it's like the Doctor, the Master, the Butcher, the Baker, the Candlestick Maker.
So theoretically, there's nothing stopping me, a Time Lord, getting to that big namey ceremony, and it's like, please welcome our newest Time Lord graduate, the baddest bitch.
Yeah, no, there's nothing to stop you from. Like, I think it seems like generally it like describes an occupation or like, but you know, baddest bitch can be an occupation.
Or anyway. I could be called the hedge trimmer, like that guy who's still trimming hedges outside your house.
Yeah, he's trimming the hedges, I think, like on the other side now.
Look, we just need to acknowledge it so that people aren't like, what the fuck's going on there?
Usually this happens at like 7 or 8 in the morning, which is annoying in its own way, but like annoying in a way that only impacts me.
It's maddening in a different way.
Yeah.
So should we dive in? Have we explained what the show is?
This is Pitch Shift. We pitch movies based on songs.
And this time also apparently film posters.
For films that I hadn't even heard of until you were like, this is the poster.
Yeah, so should we get into it? Should we dive straight in?
Yes.
So we're going to open in like a big old fancy estate. Like the sort of place you go when you're in England and you're like, oh shit, they got a fancy place, let's go have a look around. And so we're like following a little tour of the fancy place, which is being led by like an old dear volunteer. You know how like to be a volunteer in a historic house you have to be like historic already? She's one of those. So she's like leading this tour group and she's talking about the staircase. This is big grand staircase down the middle of the house. And she's like, it was redone in the 1920s. Apparently she's also a ghost. She's like, it was redone in the 1920s and they got a new banister design all the way from America and it was shipped out here on a ship. Back then, shipping was on a ship, and it was shipped out here, and then the cheap-ass owners just got a local craftsman to do knockoffs for the rest of the banisters. But the original got badly damaged on the journey, so all of them have replicated these particular dents as a result of poor package handling, because even though they did things better back in those days, shipping was poorly handled. This old lady, like, rambles way too much and the whole audience are like, is this meant, like, should I know who this old lady is? They don't. She's never in this film again.
Cool.
So we have a look at, like, the staircase and you can see, like, all of these dents and dings replicated in all the different banisters. And then she's like, but you can tell which one is the real original because all the others were made from cheap wood, so they don't really hold much weight and we have to be very careful as we go up to check out the library. And so they all head up the stairs into the library. At the back of the group is this woman who is paying attention, probably a little too much, but not like taking notes or anything. So we follow that woman, hard cut into her in a cafe, where we learn that her name is Mia. Probably like one of the baristas is like, order for Mia. And she's like, she's waiting for someone. She's not like tearing her hair out nervous, but she is a bit fidgety. Like we probably see her like scrolling her phone, tapping nails, like wondering if the person she's waiting for is actually going to come. And he does, which is nice for her because the film wouldn't happen otherwise. So this is Frank, who like they clearly know each other quite well, but they haven't seen each other in quite a long time. So like literally the first thing that Frank says is like, oh my God, I didn't recognize you. And Mia's like, that's weird. You look exactly the same. And so there's that awkward thing when you're like, do I hug this person? Do we handshake? Like, do I stand up? Do you stand up? Do you want to go get coffee? Cause you'll have to queue. You know, those super awkward interactions where it's like, where is this?
Yeah, and then that thing you say hi, and then it's like, oh, I'm gonna go get my coffee, and then they come back, and you're like, oh, now I'm gonna go get my coffee. So it's like 10 minutes before you actually talk.
Yeah, and like Mia already has her coffee because she's like, oh, I already ordered. I thought that like I thought it was table service. It's not. Just like that really awkward interaction, and just for like head casting, I'm imagining Mia is like Natalie Dormer, like that sort of like, unapologetically gorgeous, but always dressed down in movies like she's not as beautiful as she is. And then for Frank, I'm thinking like Johnny Flynn, who is in Cordelia, which is that movie that has a poster it doesn't deserve.
The disappointment that has named itself a movie, yes.
Yes, but also like Mr. Knightley in the most recent Emma, and he's great in that. That's a great Emma.
Oh, Emma with the full stop.
Yeah, Emma.
Emma. It's said in the same tone as Adam.
Emma. Just the idea that it's Mr. Knightley blowing a sick vapor in it. Emma.
Yeah. That is a lot of the relationships between Austin's women and Austin's men.
I'd like to propose an addendum to that rule, which is that Mr. Darcy has the energy of, ah, oh, fuck, I can't believe you've done that.
I feel like Darcy would be anti-vape, and then Wickham would come in and would be vaping everywhere.
Yeah, Wickham would be that other vine of the, there's like a girl vaping at a party, and then it pans to the guy's face, and he's like, wow. That's Wickham.
Why are we talking about? Oh, yeah. So what's his name
Johnny
again?
Flynn.
What's
the actor? Johnny Flynn. Which sounds like a made up name that you'd be like, Bart Simpson's pretending to be cool now, so he's called Johnny Flynn. Yeah.
It sounds like the alter ego name of a Marvel superhero.
Yeah, but like not
Johnny
not a
Flynn
main
becomes
stage one.
Stickman. Like.
Can you?
We're only a couple of minutes into this screenplay, and we have gone in many different directions.
Yeah, that's what we love to do here.
Yeah, we love to come up with the next big Marvel hit. Just out of interest, Charlie, what is Stickman's power? Does he stick to things, or does he fight with a stick?
I believe that he like
becomes a stick insect.
See, he could become a stick insect, or he could have like excellent powers fighting with stick. I don't think it's that he sticks to things, because that would be Sticky Man.
So Johnny Flynn is in this movie.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, Johnny Flynn is Frank. So I did look this up, and those two actors are basically the same age. So it's not that whole thing in movies where they're like, you know, when we were at high school together, and you're like, there is clearly a 20-year age gap here. Because these two were at high school together, as we discovered,
the actors. I thought you were saying that the actors both went to the same high school. I'm like, oh, like Tinnitus Castellay and Cancel Amber Alert. Those two dudes went to the same high school.
Wait,
is this a reference I don't get?
Can I translate that? Is that Timothy Chalamet and Ansel Elgort?
Yes, it is.
Oh my God.
Cancel Amber Alert and Tamburlaine Camembert.
So these two characters, Frank and Mia, they were at high school together. They're chatting. They get like that awkward kind of thing because it's been like 20 years since they were at high school together. But we learn through this conversation that kind of out of the blue, Mia was like, hey, I'm in London. Do you want to catch up for coffee? And it's that weird thing where you're like, ah, we've grown so much. We're no longer the shitheads we were in high school. But also like, where do we stand? What is this conversation? Who the fuck are we now? And that awkward like coffee chat. And Frank isn't like outright cold, but he definitely has like what I'd say is an upper hand in the conversation. Like Mia is putting a lot more effort into keeping it going and asking about him and his family, and like he was recently divorced and his mother passed away recently, so she's got a lot to ask about there, whereas he's not really asking much back.
So is it clear from this conversation whether there were like friends in high school that then have like lost touch, or like is it ambiguous like whether they dated? Is it ambiguous whether they were just like acquaintances and she's reached out?
I think it should be a little ambiguous, like kind of that thing where like you clearly know that they weren't like besties. It's not like they were besties who's lost touch, but like you don't know whether it is a case of they were literally just at the same school. It was probably like quite a small school that like they're talking about their classmates and the fact that there were only like 16 of them or something. And probably most of them are into meth now. Like it was that kind of high school.
Okay.
You know, the meth high school.
Right. You've heard of maths high school. Now get ready for meth high school.
So yeah, it is quite ambiguous what their relationship was in high school, but now it's like we're adults and like we both came out of the small town and we both survived. And, you know, Mia was in London, so she was like, let's get coffee. And it was sort of a thing of, there's probably a mention that like she had to find his Facebook or something. Like maybe she even messaged him through LinkedIn because he doesn't have Facebook or something. Like quite
gross that he has LinkedIn.
And also like Frank should be very like well-dressed, not like three-piece suit, but very nice suit, whereas Mia like doesn't look raggedy, but she looks like jeans and t-shirt,
like a normal human.
Yeah, like a normal human. Yeah, so like it's an awkward, quite stilted conversation, but Mia sort of ends it by saying that she is going to be in town for a little while. She doesn't say why, but Frank's sort of like, oh, I've got this work drinks thing, do you want to come to it? And she's like, oh, that's a bit weird. And he's like, I don't have anyone else. Like, I just got divorced, so no one else is going to come with me. And it's like, haha.
So what, you don't have any friends?
Actually, you know what? She probably says that. There's probably, like, once it stops being super awkward, Mia is probably cracking, like, jokes that aren't mean, but are kind of like, what, you don't have any other friends to go to a work drinks with you?
And he's like, no, I don't. And she's like, oh, okay.
He's probably like, I'm trying to be nice here. And she's like, yeah, sorry. Like, you kind of get the idea that Mia is someone whose default is not nasty, but a bit mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So Mia gets invited along to this drinks. She shows up. It's in, like, fancy, swanky, like, top-level penthouse, view of all of London, like, absolute rich cunt territory.
Love it.
And Mia is quite awkward in that environment. So she's like, worn a nice dress, but a nice dress for her is from Zara. So that's kind of where we come to learn that Frank is very wealthy, is not only like from a wealthy family, but is now in charge of some major successful tech business that's like not Amazon, but you know, it's Amazon.
Mm. Yeah.
Like that sort of like thing where he has been held up as his business success. It's like, I started it in my parents' garage. It's like, yeah, but it was a 14-car garage on your family estate. Yeah, so Frank's that kind of rich. And like, just for the sake of this, let's say it's medical tech that he's in the same way that Elon Musk is like. Oh my God,
he's Elizabeth Holmes.
He's a little bit like, Elizabeth Holmes.
I have a thing, it's called Meranos.
Yeah, so we'll say it's medical tech, and Mia clearly has like enough medical knowledge that she isn't as left behind in these conversations as you would initially assume she is. In fact, in a lot of cases, it feels like she has much more operational knowledge of medicine than other people there. And eventually one of the like rich man wannabe doctor tech investors there is just like, well, what do you know about curing cancer? And she's like, well, I've got it, so. And Frank probably overhears that conversation, like isn't actually part of it. And then Frank is like taking Mia home and is kind of like, so when were you gonna mention that you have cancer? And Mia's like, I at some point. And he's like,
it's also like, I don't really know if it's any of your business, dude.
And it's kind of that thing where Mia probably says it's a lot easier to tell a stranger than someone you actually know that you got cancer. And so Frank's like, oh, is that why you're in London for a while? And she's like, yeah, so hopefully, you know, hopefully I'll leave here at some point, but who knows? So it's kind of like a weird note to be like, here's someone I haven't seen for 20 years. They might be dead next week. But Mia gets Frank to drop her off at like a not fancy, but like relatively nice looking hotel, probably like a chain, like whatever the equivalent of Vibe is in the UK.
Like a Holiday Inn.
At the Hotel Motel Holiday Inn.
I have a side. So now it's kind of like the tone is that we're still kind of confused as to why Mia's reached out at all.
Yeah. Right?
Because that's what this is laying the groundwork for. It's like, she's reached out, they've had this conversation where she seems really eager, but she withholds, like, the biggest thing that's happening in her life.
Yeah, like, we should be not sus of Mia, but we should just be like, what are you doing, girl? And that should be made a lot more, what are you doing, girl, when after being dropped off at the Holiday Inn, she walks away from there, gets on the tube, goes to a completely different suburb, and goes into a, like, 30-bedder dorm hostel. Like an absolute shitty, like, backpacker hostel.
Yeah.
So for the next, like, couple days, we sort of follow little bits, like Mia and Frank catching up every now and then because he's like, well, shit, you got cancer. I should at least, like, buy you breakfast, that kind of thing.
I should clock some hours before you clock out.
And on the other hand, we see Mia, and she'll be like, well, I better go. I've got a doctor's appointment at 10, so that I need to leave this breakfast early. But when she says she has a doctor's appointment, when we follow her, she's going shopping and, like, browsing bookstores, having a coffee, probably going to a bunch of museums, like, living a tourist life. But then we'll catch up with Frankie to be like, well, how was the doctor? And she'll be like, yeah, I had to have a CT scan, which meant, oh, did you know when you have, like, this particular type of scan, you set off the anti-theft alarms in shots for the rest of the day because you got a bit of this radioactive stuff in you. And, like, very detailed for someone who is lying about going to the hospital.
Yeah. Also, the dramatic irony here is huge.
Yeah.
Like, we're not hiding from the audience that she is lying, which is an interesting way to weave this.
Mm. You're ready for more lies?
Yes. Always.
It's all lies from here on out. So, like, in spite of that kind of awkward first encounter where we didn't really know where any of them stood, and Frank's sort of unexpected invitation to work drinks, like, Frank does keep catching up with her, and it's clearly not just because of the cancer thing. And you get the vibe that it's like, oh, in high school she would have ignored him. Or if not ignored, then made his life hell. Like, there's just such a, like, underlying meanness to the way that Mia jokes about things. But also, Frank has kind of the same energy. And you're like, oh, in high school, you would have been a bitter nerd. Like, you would have been a bitter rich nerd. And, like, both of you would have been insufferable, but for very different reasons. And because they've both got that, like, awful person energy, they kind of keep hanging out. And you're sort of sitting there being like, are they going to fuck?
Yeah, you're sitting, as you're watching the film, you're like, don't date. Don't you fucking date.
Kind of like,
don't you do it.
Like, I haven't seen season two of You, but kind of like season two of You, I think.
Yeah, that checks out.
So, like, there is the inevitable point where you're like, oh, yeah, no, they're going to fuck. So they go home together, and Mia, like, is still keeping up kind of that cancer thing. She probably, like, it's probably like he's going to drop her off at the hotel, and she's like, you know, I haven't got any appointments till 11 tomorrow. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, no, they're going to fuck. So you go back to, like, very fancy apartment, penthouse, like, also, like, that rich person minimalism that you're like, oh, cool. So the thing is that everything you own is very expensive, but you only own, like, 10 things.
Mm-hmm.
So next morning, Mia is there, probably, like, checking her watch, being like, well, I need to be out of here by 11. And she hears someone else in the apartment. And she's like,
Whomst.
So she goes out into the kitchen, is like, whomst, where there is, like, mid-20s model type. And this is Alice, the ex-wife.
Uh-huh.
Who's just like, the first thing she says when she sees Mia is like, oh, you're older than I was expecting. And then, like, probably, like, brushes something off along the lines of, like, sorry, I had to cut, like, he's not going to notice that this stuff's missing, but he will give me hell if I ask for it in the settlement. So she's probably, like, taking a bunch of, like, crystal champagne glasses and, like, little touches around the apartment, probably bits of art, like, just unabashedly taking stuff off the wall and being like, this is mine now. And just in terms of casting, I'm thinking, like a Florence Pugh type. Like,
Florence Pugh?
Florence Pugh? Whom? Florence Pugh. She's, like, clearly doesn't give a fuck that Mia is in the apartment, but also doesn't give a fuck about anything. In fact, she's probably breaking a few things, like, things that you wouldn't realize were broken until you needed them. She'll stab his fucking boots. He'll have waterproof boots, and she'll get out a corkscrew and put a bunch of holes in the side of them, because there's no good way to find out that your waterproof boots aren't waterproof anymore.
Nice.
Yeah, okay, so she's my favorite character.
And so Mia is probably following her around being like, no, don't do that.
Well, also, I feel like it's like, she would be like, I'm also planning to grift this man for all he's worth. So
Alice probably monologues a bit, to be honest. She's probably someone who is used to, like, just talking at the help, and clearly thinks Mia is, like, if not the help, then the equivalent social standing. But eventually she's just like, what did you say your name was? And Mia's like, oh, I'm Mia. And Alice is just like, and folds her arms and is like, you're the bitch from school. And Mia's like, oh, you heard about me? And Alice is like, look, I'm not gonna get in your way, but, you know, just some free advice. Don't have a brain. Don't question him.
Jesus.
Yeah. And then probably, like, knocks over some expensive glass statue on the way out. So the audience...
Batman's up and fucks out.
Yeah, she Batman's up and fucks out. So the audience at this point are like, And when Frank invites Mia to stay permanently in the apartment, they're like,
Oh, no.
And we see, like, Mia packing up all of her stuff from the hostel, ready to, like, move into this very fancy, very nice apartment, including what is in the bottom of her suitcase, which is a little plastic folder that says Mia on it. And when she opens it up, there's a passport in there for Mia.
Oh.
Who is not her. Mia is a completely different person in that passport photo and in all the other identity documents that Mia has got. So
it's like a picture of Saoirse Ronan or something.
I was going to say it's a picture of Sarah Bolger, who's the Once Upon a Time actress who looks like dollar store Natalie Dormer.
We have Natalie Dormer at home.
So our reveal that this is not Mia is like, that's your end of act one. And so You've got like your fun and games from then is the audience knowing it's like, not only is this person lying about having cancer, she's lying about who she is. And you're sort of trying to basically work out what her end game is, because she's not actively like skimming credit cards and taking cash out of the safe, but she is like checking what the credit card numbers are and like trying to see what the safe combination is. And she probably does that thing where she's like very vocally against Frank helping her. He'll be like, oh, I'll pay for your medical treatment. She'll be like, no, you can't do that. You're like, no, you need the best doctors. And she's like, well, if you insist, and probably like thousands of pounds worth of medical bills are paid into a PayPal account that, you know, has questionable origins.
And meanwhile, we're also not quite sure what he wants out of her after that conversation with Alex.
Yes. Yeah. So like it's 50-50, like, will Frank notice that this is not that bitch from high school? And 50-50, like, why did he let that bitch from high school into his house in the first place? Like, what's his deal, basically? And you probably see, like, more of them socially interacting with other similarly rich, wealthy background people. And, like, they've both got that really kind of underlying nastiness to them, where they'll be like perfectly charming to someone's face, and then as soon as they're gone, just saying the most horrendous shit. And as soon as like Frank starts doing that, Mia plays it up, and you see the way that she will sort of modify her behavior to suit whatever sort of mood he's in. And she's like, she's quite good at this, even if occasionally she'll sort of slip up with remembering people's names from high school and things like that. Like, you probably see her going into the bathroom, like checking Facebook to stalk like which one of their meth addicted former classmates is doing what, and then coming out and being like, did you hear Jamie had another baby and she's still on meth?
Great update. Cool.
Yeah, so like you sort of probably learn through like drips and drabs of conversation that at this point you're like, oh, this is totally Frank fulfilling the fantasy of like being a teenage nerd who is insufferable, but who's like, woe is me, the world hates me, and then like getting rich and getting the girl that Mia
someday
is.
Someday
like,
you will all work for me. That
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, you will all work for me and you'll come begging to date me even though you wouldn't in high school. That kind of thing. Like, it's definitely that fulfilling fantasy. And Mia is probably dressing in a way that you're like, that's almost like how an 18-year-old would have dressed 20 years ago. Not overtly like fully Rachel from Friends, but kind of playing into that whole vibe.
And is this like, is this a change from earlier?
Not super noticeably, but like she is sort of adjusting. The better that this Mia, because it's not really Mia, gets to know Frank, the more she sort of adjusts to what she can tell he is looking for, basically. Because he love a pretty girl. And she's like, oh, and a twisted mind? I'm so good at her. So anyway...
I don't like the song.
But Mia gets to a point where she's like, this grift is probably not going to last forever. So she's like, I got the all clear from the doctors and I don't need chemo, which is great because it means I don't have to shave my head at any point. Or actually, you know what? She probably does shave her head. It's probably a thing where she's like, I've got to start chemo. And then like you see her shaving her head in the bathroom. She's like, I've had some chemo.
All the hair fell out at once. Yeah.
Yep.
Sometimes it happens like that.
She just stops wearing makeup and it's like, wow, you do look really ill from all of the chemo that you're having. So she's probably like, oh, my treatment is finished. That's nice. I'm going to go back to the shitty village that we both grew up in. And Frank's like, well, look, I'll take you down there. We can, you know, make a weekend of it. We'll go to my old family estate. Like, we've previously learned his mum died quite recently, so he's inherited it, but he's not living there because it's the middle of fucking nowhere. It's like big, beautiful, fancy country manor in the arse end of England.
And at this point in the movie, do we just cut in the approach to Pemberley Manor from the BBC Jane Austen?
Yes.
I'm trying to tie back our Jane Austen bit from earlier.
Yeah, we just cut that in and everyone's like, it's weird that Colin Firth is now in this movie.
Oh, Colin Firth's always been in the movie.
Yeah, this is a movie about gaslighting. Colin Firth has always been in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they go to the big country estate and really eagle-eyed viewers will be like, oh, I've seen that. It's the estate from the start of the film.
I've seen that.
So they're like settling in there. They're the only two in the house. It's probably like they get some big fancy restaurant to deliver food because they still do that post-pandemic, I guess.
Ew.
Yeah, so it's fancy and big and very empty. And you get this like probably a decent chunk of the runtime is this dinner scene, which is just like Frank and Mia talking. And Mia is sort of still picking up bits here and there, like she's still talking in terms of people that they supposedly once knew who live in the village nearby and she's gonna go back and live there. And they're sort of talking and just like the vibe shouldn't be like actively unsettling, but you know, then this is like really putting tickets on myself. But you know that dinner scene in Parasite where they're just having dinner, but the whole time you're like, what's going to go wrong? When's it going to go wrong? So things do go wrong, though, when at about halfway through the meal, Frank is like, so when were you going to tell me you don't have cancer? And you see Mia just being like, what do you mean? And he's like, I thought it would be while you were still in London, but you've really committed, like coming out here, going home, that's really committing. And she's like, how did you know? And he's like, oh, I had someone following you. And she's like,
oh, God.
What? And then he goes off on this big monologue about this party that he threw at the estate when they were teenagers. And Mia's kind of like, are you talking about that? When you've just been like, oh, all of those lies you told me. And Mia is also very much like, does he know I'm not her? Does he know I'm not her? And she probably thinks he doesn't. Like, she probably puts in a few kind of testing questions and realizes that he still thinks that she is the real Mia because he goes on this diatribe about the party he threw back when they were all 17. They all got really trashed. And she probably, like, made out with him and then laughed about it. Like, something that was very, like, dumb teenage bitchy girl thing to do, but that he has clearly held on to for all of those years.
Yeah, the kind of thing that's, like, really awful when you're a teenager, and then when you grow up, you kind of move past it, or you go to therapy, and it's like, oh, I should get over that, or whatever.
Yeah, but even though he's like, yeah, even though you get to the point where you're like, I should get over that, it still kind of hurts to remember. And you're like, you want to get to the point where you can joke about it, but you never do. And clearly Frank has never gotten to that point because he's like still talking about that. Yeah. And you can see that like fake Mia is like, oh, fuck, I didn't know about this. And this is clearly like,
but also is like, dude, I'm not even the woman that you made out with, and like, get the fuck over it, get a fucking life.
So she's like, she is learning about this with the audience, and is like, oh, I didn't know that this happened. This makes all of this like awkward because how do I play that as like, oh, I was secretly in love with you the whole time when clearly like she already did that and it fucking wrecked him. So she's just like, what do I do? What do I do? She's like, can I go to the bathroom? And just like really, really awkwardly excuses herself and tries to
leave. Also the vibe is dangerous here, right? Like we're kind of like, fuck, like.
Yeah, we're like, what?
We're a little bit concerned for her.
Yeah, and it's very much like she the whole time has been like, he's like clearly still in love with this girl. But then it's like, oh no, there's another emotion going on here. And I need to Batman up and fuck out of here.
Yeah. So just to clarify, I had assumed that Frank was a Christian Grey type. Turns out he's been a Jack Hyde type the whole time. Turns out he's been fiction editor Jack Hyde the whole time.
You can't throw in deep cut 50 Shades of Grey references like that, Charles. Yes, I can.
The information that I have, the knowledge I have of 50 Shades of Grey has to be useful for something, Tansy. And it may as well be this podcast.
He's
like the guy who's like, that other kid got adopted before me. Now I will ruin his adult life.
And crash his helicopter.
Crash his helicopter, try to steal his not even his kind of girlfriend.
His not wife.
And then kidnap his sister who he doesn't care about. And
I'm on the opposite spectrum of this 50 Shades Kinsey scale where I know nothing about 50 Shades of Grey. As I'm listening to this, I'm like, I don't know how much of this is real and how much is like the ghosts. All of this.
Real. It's all real.
It's all real. It's like describing Riverdale to someone. You're like, I don't know how much of this you're making up. I really can't tell. Sorry, you said Jingle Jangle?
That's me describing Pretty Little Liars to people.
Everything I've learned about Riverdale and 50 Shades I've learned against my will.
You're welcome.
So to use Charles' words and not mine, he's not a Christian Grey. He is a Jack Hyde.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so the vibe is, like, dangerous at this point. And fake Mia is like, time to get out of here. Like, I've already stolen a few thousand pounds for fake medical treatment. I can get out at this point. So she tries to leave, and she cannot.
Oh, no.
Front door's locked. Tries the side door. Locked. Kitchen empty. The only thing in the kitchen is a big, thick plastic bag and a shovel.
Oh, okay.
No.
And this is the point at which Mia's like, might have fucked up here.
Feels bad, man.
Feels bad. Feels real bad.
Oh, fuck, I can't believe you've done this.
Yep. So Mia is like, okay, all doors locked, plastic bag, shovel, no knives in the kitchen, maybe have a harder look, finds real hidden knife in kitchen. Not like secret knife, but like knives that like...
Secret knife.
So yeah, she probably gets like small veggie knife, like couldn't do much damage with it. All of the big carving knives, they've all been taken away.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, small veggie knife, not many
options.
And the
house is big, right? So she's had to take time to move from room to room.
Yeah,
house is big. You know how when you see the suspense scenes in big houses, it's always like there's comfort knowing that she's kind of got some distance from him, but also discomfort because you don't know where in the house he could be.
Yeah, you don't know where he is.
And also like how long it's going to take him to realize that she's
not in the bathroom.
Not coming back from the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. But she's like, okay, can't exactly be like, I'm not Mia, I'm a scammer who's tried to steal all of your money. Feel like that's gonna end with me in the plastic bag too.
Yeah.
Only have small knife, not good for stabbing. She's like, you know what? I fucked my way into this problem and I'll fuck my way out of it.
And is this also where
Wait,
we
but
get
she did
because one of the questions
the problem. Sorry.
Well, one of the questions I had, like at the back of my mind through all of this, is that we don't know like whether she's a mega spy or whether she's just a scammer, right? So it seems like at this stage we also get the sense that she's working alone. Is that right? Like it's kind of she's hatched all of this. She's not a super spy who's got like some cyanide and like a secret trapdoor under her tooth.
No, she's definitely like, not. She's like
a secret trapdoor under her tooth? That's amazing.
Yeah, she's not. She's alone. She hasn't got much backup. She's clearly improvising at this point. So she's like, well, might as well try and fuck my way out of this problem. So she, in spite of like all conventional wisdom of horror or like human hunting movies, goes back to the kitchen and is like, gonna try and fuck my way out of this problem. Clearly not gonna work. Absolutely not gonna work.
I mean, it is Natalie Dormer, so.
How does one show not tell that she's decided to fuck her way out of this situation?
Probably her, like, looking at very small knife, plastic bag for body, and then just probably, like, pulling dress down so heaps more cleavage and going back to that room.
Pulling hair out of ponytail.
And being like, all right, I'm done talking. And it doesn't work this time because he's clearly planning to kill her. So she's like, I'll be in my room, and then does not go to her room, like, goes to ground. So, like, probably the rest of this film is basically, like, one location kind of horror-esque.
Oh, absolutely. Hunt. Like a Don't Breathe kind of.
Yep.
Except that he can see, so even harder.
And you've probably got as well that, like, we've established there's some sort of intercom system through the house that was, like, used back in ye olde days when one had to call the servants. So he's probably speaking into that, and she can hear him, like, no matter where she is in the house.
So has he figured out that she knows that he is going to kill her?
I think so. I think either that or he's like, I'm going to kill her anyway. Like, he's real set on killing this woman.
Well, he got all prepared to do a murder.
Yeah.
He's not going to not murder her just because she's not the right one.
No, like, but I mean, it's like when she goes...
a good plastic bag.
When she goes back to the dining room, does he know that she knows that he's going to kill her? Or is he still kind of like, they somehow settle the issue of, like, she's lied about the cancer and she makes some excuse to go to bed?
Yeah, it's probably, like, it should be something where the audience are sitting there being like, does he know that she's found that plastic bag and shovel and that she's got a knife right now? And, like, she would probably try to talk her way around it, being like, you know, all of that stupid shit I did as a teenager, like, I didn't mean any of it. And, like, a lot of cruel shit happened to me too. And, like, trying to talk her way around it. And just, like, none of that's working.
And now that I've had cancer, I'm going to be a better person. Thank you for teaching me.
Yeah, you're God, so how does, wise. How does she explain the cancer? She's probably just like, I just really wanted to talk to you, and I didn't know any other way, and I just fell into a lot of lies. And
like, spins a narrative about, like, an abusive ex or something.
Yeah, probably.
You
yeah.
know, I didn't want to, but it just, I was so scared, so I needed the support, the blah, 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 and it seemed easier to say that I had cancer than say my ex-husband is
trying to kill me.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what, it probably is, like, exactly that, and she's like, you know, that my ex-husband is trying to kill me, and then she's just like, oh, no, he knows. He's worked out that I know about the bag at this point, and then she, like, bolts out of there. And
yeah, anyway, go to bed, bye.
Well, like, he knows all the doors are locked. He knows no one else knows she's here. Like, he's going to take his time killing this bitch from high school.
Oh, God.
It's probably, yeah, that she, like, bolts out of there, and he's, like, probably checks his watch and gives her a minute head start and, like, leans into the intercom and is like, you got a minute? And she's like, fuck, 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 fuck.
I hate it. Fuck you, Frank.
And she probably, like, remembers something from that architecture talk she did around this house and is like, sawdust in the walls, sawdust in the walls. So she, like, pulls apart some of the paneling and gets into, like, the sort of leeway between the walls of the house and is kind of getting around through that, almost like use an event in Among Us. Like,
also Bob's Burgers.
Yes. Yeah, so she is, like, moving around, she's fairly well hidden, but you get the sense that, like, there is no escape here. Like, she probably tries to get out through the roof. Like, she's still looking for a way out of there. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Like, he's moving slow, but he will get her kind of vibe.
Yeah. And she probably finds as well at some point another, like, sharp, pointy weapon that she can use that's better than her little, like, fruit knife or whatever she's got.
Like a poker for the fire or something.
Yeah, yeah. Got to be real sharp. Probably, like, leftover tools from some historical restoration thing. So, like, she gets to a point where she's like, I can't just keep running. I've got to engage. And so she's using the other end of the intercom to sort of start, like, getting Frank talking and her being like, so did you decide you wanted to kill me when your mother died? Like, basically trying like, psychology her way around this. It doesn't work.
I can't imagine it would.
She's not as good at this as she thinks, but she's probably got him talking to the point where he's really distracted. And she's like, I'm only going to have one shot at this. She's in the walls around that room, goes to, like, get out of there and stab him. But she doesn't really have the heart to kill a person, even when they're going to kill her. He has no such problems, grabs whatever sharp stabby thing she's doing and just, like, stabs her through the hand and pins her to a table.
Danzy, I thought you said this was going to be, like, the poster. I thought you said this was going to be Pride and Prejudice and pegging.
And then I also said, it's all lies from here, baby. So, like, stabbed through the hand and stuck to a table, she's just like, I'm not Mia. And he's like, excuse me? And she's like, the real Mia's dead. And he's like, excuse me? Except probably doesn't actually say that. He's probably just like, excuse white-faced me? Shock.
A snoomy?
And she's just like, I'm a nurse. I was one of her palliative care nurses. She had a car accident. She just kept talking and no one came for her. No one visited. It took about a week for her to die and no one came. And in that moment of shock, she manages to pull hand knife out of table and just bolts. She's like, I've got knife through hand, can't take knife out because I am nurse and know that, like, knife through hand is better in hand than out. So she's running around with knife in hand and finds herself in the master bedroom that Frank's mother was living in before she died.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'm a nurse. There's got to be something here I can use. And she finds, like, a life alert system that dear old dead mum had in case she had a fall or something.
Help, I've been stabbed in the hand and I can't get up.
Exactly. So she sets that off and is like, in a matter of time, someone's going to come. Like, we won't be here alone forever. And I've got a knife in my hand. Like, there's no way that I can lose this argument.
Yeah. He put a knife in my hand.
So she set off this life alert. She's like, I only need to hide for, let's say, 20 minutes. I've got a knife in my hand. I just need to stay alive. She's tourniqueting her arm, that kind of thing. She's full on Rambo at this point.
Uh-huh.
She's probably leaving a little blood trail everywhere she goes. And Frank's like, hell yeah, this mate, like, I thought the hunt was fun, but it turns out, like, blood trail even easier. So he's following that around.
I hate him.
And finds the life alert signal thing. So he's like, okay, I've got a time limit on this shit. I better kill her now. And then just, like, decides to turn the tables and goes on this fat rant over the intercoms about, like, the fact that Mia is nothing. It's like, even when they come, who are they going to believe? Like, you're just some dumb, pretty girl who came here of her own choice. Like, you are just a pretty girl and that's not going to end well for you.
Oh, dear. Clearly he's never heard the song Mama Say by Betty Hume.
And Mia's like, yeah, fine. And, like, comes out from her walls hiding place and is, like, up on the landing. And she's like, yep, that's fine. Yep, okay. This is how this is going to go, is it? And he's like, yeah, probably. And she's like, do you want the knife out of my hand or have you got a separate one? And he's like, oh, I was actually going to strangle you because then, you know, got an alibi if anything goes wrong. She's like, is that an alibi? He's like,
that's not really an alibi though, is it? Because it's gonna show that she was strangled.
Yeah, but then it's like, oh, she liked being strangled. And it's like, but she not anymore because she's dead.
Because she's sweet but a psycho, a little bit psycho.
Also kind of ruined by the knife in the hand. But he's like,
yeah, I was gonna say she also likes a knife in the hand.
And he's like, yeah, no, I mean, I don't really need an alibi. Like, they won't find your body. This estate is too large. And she's like, oh boy, I'm gonna die. And they're like, slowly, he's slowly approaching and she's not, like, resigned, but is clearly the same person who is, like, at the heart of herself a bitch. Like, she's just a nasty person. And she's like, you know what, you're gonna go through your whole life thinking that, like, Everyone was mean to you
because
you're a nerd.
I want you to know from the bottom of my heart that that won't be true.
Yeah, basically. And she's probably like, you probably think that the real Mia was awful to you because she was a bad person. And I want you to know that you deserved it. Oh. And he just fucking lunges at her, at which point she uses the last of her very weak, blood-lost self to move aside and reveal the weak banisters that the old lady was talking through at the start of the film that can't support much weight. And yeah, he just goes straight through them, falls an entire story down the stairs. And Mia doesn't take the time to be like, is he dead or not? Because he looks like he's in a bad shape. There is like absolutely unsettling bone cracky noises.
In a literal bad shape.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in a tetrahedron of bad shape. So she's like, she doesn't take the time to check if he's alive. She just grabs his keys and gets the fuck out of there. Like, just absolutely sprints.
Absolutely Batmans up.
And fucks out of there. So she's like sprinting out into the woods around the estate, like going as fast as she can, doesn't know where the major road is, but certain she'll find one eventually. And we see like her still running, like still got a knife in her hand, still absolutely running on adrenaline. You see like the rich person life alert show up to the estate where they find Frank with many broken bones, but still alive, and they're like, that must be why the life alert was hit.
Better pack him up. And he can't get up.
He has fallen and he can't get up. So he's like getting loaded into a like medical helicopter. They're going to take him to the best doctors that they can get. They're going to fix him up. He's going to be fine. And he's going to be absolutely fine. And on the other hand, Mia is out in the woods in this estate, miles from anywhere. You've got like the heavy breathing that should be a little reminiscent of the chorus to this song. She's bleeding out and you just start to see eyes in the distance at about wolf height, just glinting off the smallest bit of moon.
I'm sorry, you say wolf height?
Yeah, wolf or fox height, you know.
Okay,
like,
yeah,
like predator animal height.
Uh-huh.
You know, eyes facing forward, they're a predator like a Muppet.
Sorry, eyes facing forward, they're a predator like Muppets.
Animals with eyes facing forward and circular pupils are predators.
In general, yet another just joke in we've the stolen Muppets.
From Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, yet another joke I've stolen from Twitter.
Also, what a shocking reveal that when you die, Kermit beckons you into the light.
into the afterlife.
Okay, so
I feel like that would make death easier for most people.
Kermit D, angel of death here. But also, I just want to clarify, is there a literal wolf there?
There's several. There's like several, okay, like animals in the distance,
and they're like,
and they're all like,
we smell blood.
That's some blood, and it's almost like it's a commentary on the different treatment that the rich and poor get at the end of their lives, in spite of being awful people. And on Mia standing out in the woods, bleeding out, and definitely about to get ripped to shreds. Cut to black. End of film.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. So that's Mama Say.
I just, sorry.
Cue,
okay,
song?
Yes. That would be the second most disconcerting credit needle drop of all time after Bad Guy in Brightburn.
Duh. I just want to say that, like, my desktop background is a picture of C-3PO, and it's one of those weird star wipes where, like, I can't remember what the scene is, but C-3PO's just been told something shocking, and his face is like, what the fuck, as it, like, star wipes to a different scene, and it's the exact face that I made when you were, like, cut to black end of film. Just like, what the fuck?
Is that allowed?
Yeah. You know.
This movie took us
places. I really feel like a put-upon gay robot right now, Tansy. What the fuck?
This movie took us places, Tansy.
Yeah. Were they good places? Who can say?
Yeah, there was a moral, which I didn't expect.
Yeah, look, the moral came late in the game, but I was like, realistically, she wouldn't get out of this well. Like, She's been stabbed in the head and she's running from a psycho killer who is rich, so like everything's gone wrong.
I thought it would be more of a straight thriller, a la, I was going to say Pretty Little Liars, because I can't think of another thriller at the moment. But it is actually a lot deeper than that.
I'm
in that space. I watched Primal Fear today for the first time.
Ooh, good call.
Good movie.
And there are morals outside of the story. Sweet.
No, I feel like there should have been more pegging in that film, Tansy. There wasn't any.
I mean, there's not explicitly no pegging.
Yeah, but yeah, almost, I feel like the power dynamic you've set up would be like, to start off with, she'd be very much like, I am a beautiful girl that you will have sex with, and it'll be something that happens to me, not with me. But, like, you could sort of...
At the same time, if they pegged, it would make that ending scene all the more layered.
Because he got fucked in the ass, and now she's been fucked in the ass.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, let's not do a Lovecraft country.
Oh, yeah, no, it. Let's not do that.
But yeah, I feel like, you know, if he's kind of like a little bit distracted from his mission, because it's like, it turns out that she's like the bomb in the sack, basically. And he's like, wow, I've never had someone else boss me around before. What the fuck? And she's like, it's all part of my, you know, it's basically part of her psyop to like grip him.
Yeah, you could do that sort of startup.
But he's like, no, wait, the mission is that I have to kill her. Really just make me feel the poster. I want the poster.
Yeah, doing that vibe that, like, every time you think, like, hey, is he going to pick up on the fact that she's, like, clearly out to grift him? It's like, oh, no, now they're fucking again. Like, he did notice, he wouldn't want to.
It's
like,
kind of Scoop-esque, right?
Yeah.
Because in Scoop, it's kind of ScarJo goes after, is it, well, I'm totally blanking on this very, it's Hugh Jackman, right?
Is it? I'll be honest. When you said Scoop, I heard Scoob, as in the recent animated Scooby-Doo movie.
Why did you agree? I said, oh, it's very Scoob. And you're like, yeah.
I just exactly wanted to like see that. Where that was going.
I was like, I'm going to wait, and I guess I'll find out what the film is.
What polite hosts you are.
I heard Scoob, but I was like, it can't be Scoob. I'm being an idiot. She'll probably explain.
You know, the part in Scoob where Daphne grifts the rest of the gang for all that they're worth.
No, the part in Scoob where Daphne pegs Freddy.
Or, not to describe things that happen in actual movies and sound fucking insane, but the part in Scoob where Shaggy condemns himself to thousands of years as the guardian of hell in order to save his 10-year-old Great Dane from a similar fate.
Yeah. May you live.
Wait,
the
does
next
this happen?
Five
you bet this happens.
To 7 years
oh,
in
dear.
Peace, Scoob.
And also Simon Cowell is there.
Yeah.
Simon Cowell, star of Shrek 2, is in Scoob, a movie that came out this year.
I mean...
Well, Scoop.
Yeah, so Scoop, which is not Scoop.
An actual reference.
I don't think I've seen it.
I think it's a Woody Allen film.
Oofed.
Ew.
I'm kind of blanking.
Wait,
I should know, but he's
like,
in it.
Yeah, there's a film where Scarlett Johansson is a journalist.
She's
yeah,
a Scarlett.
That's a Woody Allen
ScarJo.
Film,
yeah. Yeah, ScarJo is a journalist.
Thanks,
then they
I hate it.
Some murder must happen. I don't remember what the murder is, and they basically she kind of befriends / seduces Hugh Jackman's character because they're trying to get him to confess.
Oh, okay.
And there is this scene from what I remember where kind of they call each other's bluffs. And you think that he's successful in killing her. But the twist is really bad because, spoiler alert, part of the conceit of that whole setup is that she meets him by pretending to drown at the public swimming pool. And he comes and saves her.
I'm drowning and
she
says,
I'm a really bad swimmer. And then, but then like the twist is that like he throws her overboard. He thinks that she's drowned. And then it turns out that she shows up sobbing wet and is like, oh, actually I was a state swimmer.
Oh.
And from memory, that's the end of the movie.
He's a bad, bad person. Mm-hmm. He should be in so much jail.
But not the rich person jail. Because I think what we've learnt today in a hastily tacked on metaphor is that the
rich
live in
suck?
A different world and it's totally fine for NHS nurses to scam them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. Absolutely. Like, I'm both in favour of the ex-wife stealing his stuff and I'm in favour of... I assume she was Cordelia, not Mia.
I assume her name was Cordelia.
To be honest, she didn't have a real name.
Her name's Cordelia. You're welcome.
Okay, it's Cordelia. Yeah, great. Thanks.
Yeah, because you know, the poster.
The movie that I was supposedly remaking that I haven't seen.
Yeah, I was fine with both of them grifting him, especially when it turned out, obviously, that he wanted the whole time.
Yeah, he wanted to kill them. Where can people find more of your good stuff, Zaina? Or you can just say, please don't contact me, it makes me anxious.
I'm on Instagram. I'm finishing off my first film, which is being produced out of AFTERS.
It's super exciting.
Yeah.
Zaina R. Ahmed, which is ZainaRAhmed.
What about you, Charles?
People can find me on Twitter at GirlsOChady and Letterboxd at, I think it's Charlie OG. What about you, Tansy?
You can find me on Twitter at Tansy Clipboard. Just garbage. Just constant garbage. So if you're looking for that, that's my Twitter.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
No, thanks for coming on the
show. Thank you for coming on the show.
We're so glad to have you. And yeah, looking forward to seeing a final cut of your film.
Thank you. I'll talk to you guys soon.
See y'all. This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri, Wiradjuri and Boonwurrung people. Sovereignty was never ceded, and this always was and always will be Aboriginal land.